Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom and crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to The Savvy Shrink. The Savvy Shrink is very, very honored to have Emilia Ortega Jara here today, an LCSW with a private practice at Corazon Counseling Services in Riverside. And we're just really thrilled to have you here to share your wisdom with us today, Emilia. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Andrea. I really wanted to take this time to thank you for mentoring me and coaching me as I started my private practice journey 3 years ago. You really did help me so much, and I am so grateful, and I really do appreciate you for coaching me through those little steps of the logistical parts of what it is to start a private practice. And you were the one there that really helped me through that. So I wanted to share that. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. It's truly an honor. And it's a very reciprocal process, because now I'm learning from you and learning about your practice specialties. And it's just really enriching to be able to share this time and space with you, and to have our listeners hear about your wonderful wisdom that's so important. So thank you again for being here today. It's truly an honor and a privilege to have you here. And we would love to hear you talk about a bit about your work with women and families across the lifespan, and how you got started in this, and the work that you do currently.
Yeah, so currently I have a small private practice, and I provide counseling services to women and families, with primary focus being pregnant and postpartum women struggling with emotional distress and adjustment to motherhood. But I also work with teenage girls, and just recently started working with millennial age college students, which I absolutely love this stage. Being able to support young women as they transition into adulthood and discover who they are and what they want to go. And it's just really exciting to share this journey with them. So working with women from all these different stages, teenagers, college students, you know, pregnant, postpartum moms, it's beautiful, it's really inspiring work. And my work is very much grounded in Mexican indigenous medicine teachings. So I take a very holistic approach to my healing practice, you know, paying close attention to all the elements of a woman's life and areas in a woman's life, like her mind, her body, her heart, her spirit. Because in traditional Mexican medicine teachings, the curandera or the healer, you know, she works with the entire person. Nothing is separate. All is interconnected. And one must address all those parts, you know, the whole person. So in moving, and what has gotten me to this place, and as I was reflecting on the work that I'm doing, it's like my family and culture and community really has influenced the work that I do. You know, I grew up as a first generation Chicana, you know, born here in the United States of Mexican immigrant parents that were farm workers. You know, I was born and raised in Oxnard, California, Central Coast. My parents were farm workers in that area. And I clearly remember the racism and discrimination my family and I experienced growing up in a community that there was very much segregation between, you know, the haves and the have-nots. You know, I remember being called wetback and beaner, and feeling as if, you know, that we were not welcomed, and we were made to feel as if we didn't belong. And all of that has had an impact in not only my life, but in the work that I do now. So So in my college years, like in high school, I was involved in peer counselor, and I was in the gang intervention committee and all these different organizations, kind of social justice organizations. And then in college, I took this pain, you know, and shame and indignation, and I really got involved as a community organizer and student activist. Around the time of, I don't know if you remember, California Proposition 187,
yes.
The anti-immigrant proposition that Governor Pete Wilson, which ironically, you know, 20 years later, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like I'm reliving the same xenophobia and of today's politics
right.
That I experienced back then. But now I see this generation of like the millennial or the young people really, today's youth be much stronger and more organized than we were in 1994 and 1996. So,
wow. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is where I became really engaged politically and socially. I also had this desire. I'm an empath. Mm-hmm. So this mm-hmm. desire to help others and counsel. I was a peer counselor in high school. I really enjoyed doing that and really envisioned my work in some kind of counseling field. So that's when I decided to be a social worker. And I'm like, oh, I could do the social justice, you know, work and do the counseling with the social work degree. And
wonderful.
And I love it. I love being a social worker.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful profession. Mm-hmm. And your clients and community are so lucky to be able to work with you, because it truly does come from the heart, the corazón.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's super important for me to bring in the social justice framework mm-hmm. in my healing practice now, because we need to look at the social, political, and cultural context of our clients' experience.
Absolutely.
And, right?
Absolutely. That is something we cannot ignore. And I think you hit a very important point, several important points, but, you know, oftentimes that's overlooked in the psychotherapy practice, but something that makes LCSWs unique is the approach towards incorporating social justice and that perspective. And certainly with the populations you serve, that's more important now than any other time. It's always been important, but especially with all of the stuff that's happening politically, boy, do we need people that are advocates and people that can empower individuals and communities to keep the hope going, because this is a really tough time for so many. But tell us more, Amelia.
Yeah, so then the work that I do incorporating these traditional, not only social justice, but also these traditional indigenous ancestral knowledge, to me has been, because growing up and through my years of college, being involved in these ways and these ceremonies was really healing for me,
mm-hmm.
That I wanted to incorporate this in the work that I do. So right. Before I talk about the more kind of ceremonial, maybe ritual work I do, I really wanted to start off by acknowledging and honoring all of my ancestors.
Wonderful.
And my teachers and elders that have shared their knowledge and wisdom with me.
Mm-hmm.
I really mm-hmm. couldn't be here today doing the sacred work without them. You know, I really, I just couldn't. So I want to take this time to honor them and thank them, acknowledge them. So yeah, so my knowledge and experience with ceremony, and these indigenous traditional ways, they don't, you know, they don't come just from a book or a weekend retreat like in Sedona, Arizona. So it really has been a journey for me, you know. It's been, you know, over 18 years of being part of ceremonies such as Danzasteca, you know, the Aztec dancing, the Temescal, you know, sweat lodge ceremonies, the intergenerational talking circles. It's really been more of a way of life for me.
Sure.
And now, you know, incorporating this with not only my professional, but with my family, you know, with my child that's now participates with me in these ceremonies. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
That sounds so enriching.
As much as, So when I decided to open up my private practice, you know, I was super excited because I would finally be able to share this holistic Indigenous framework in my healing work without feeling the need to hide, right, certain aspects or explain the validity and importance of such ceremony or ritual work, right? You know, because it's not evidence based or whatnot. It's like, oh, because, you know, I work for nonprofits and I work county and I work for agencies for a very long time, and I just felt they were so restricted. There was something like this fire in my belly plus my heart, like, oh, and working with communities of color, particularly Spanish speaking immigrant families and communities, this framework of one model fits everybody, CBT or whatever, it just doesn't work for all families.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I was just so frustrated at times, you know?
I can hear that. I'm so glad that we have you on the planet helping people from this holistic perspective, because I think it is very unique, and there is no one size fits all strategy. But to be able to know the community you're working with is so essential. And so your clients are very lucky to work with you. You're very in tune with what their needs are.
Yeah, and it's always a daily, you know, it's a daily learning for me. I'm always, in the morning, I wake up and set my intention and, you know, ask the universe to give me the wisdom and courage to continue this work, because it's also, it could be very, very draining, because
absolutely.
I see things from this macro perspective.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh, this whole system that's causing your depression and anxiety.
Right.
There's something wrong with you, is what have people done to you?
Exactly. Exactly. It's mind-boggling.
So ceremony work, so again, with this this ritual ceremony work is especially important, right, given today's political climate that we're living in. As we know, the racism and discrimination of our Mexican Latino communities, you know, the daily microaggressions that we receive impacts our psychological well-being.
Yeah.
And a generation, and right now it's impacting a whole generation of Chicano youth that are growing up. So it takes a toll on our emotional and mental health. And ironically, you know, there's this pressure to acculturate and assimilate when often rejecting dominant culture.
Wow.
That continues to oppress us and shame us and devalue us as people. So bringing these ancestral healing ways and ceremonies has been our medicine. You know, it's helping this new generation decolonize our minds, our hearts, our spirits. It's sort of this kind of spiritual, cultural, revolutionary act of liberation, you know. At least for me, it's been.
Wow, it just sounds incredibly empowering on so many levels. And can you elaborate specifically about the ceremony and ritual services that you offer for your clients? It sounds absolutely transcendent for so many people.
So we know that ritual, again, I'm always liking to connect. Why is this work important? Because right now, more than ever, we need ritual and ceremony, because in today's chaotic world, it leaves us emotionally and spiritually depleted, wounded. So the use of rituals, you know, brings meaning and it helps us make sense of who we are, what our purpose is, you know, taking that moment to bless what we have, to see the sacredness and appreciate the changes in one's life. And then there's this hunger for connection, community, and sisterhood. So in my healing work, I offer two types of transition rituals or rites of passage ceremonies.
Wonderful.
And they're a menarche, you know, first moon, coming of age for adolescent girls, and then mother blessing ceremonies to honor the rite of passage of motherhood. And I'm actually looking into developing some exercises on around the sacred transition of menopause.
Great.
Because I'm starting that premenopausal stage.
Oh, you and me both. fun. Oh boy, I'm gonna need your help. Big time.
I think this is a sacred transition stage. So we should that wise woman stage we're reaching.
Good.
I think it's also really important to honor
Wonderful.
that. So I'm working on a few little ceremonies, rituals around that.
Good.
But currently, in honoring the first moon or the menarche of a young woman, there's this beautiful tradition called Shilonen, or corn maiden in Mexican indigenous Aztec culture. And we still practice it today, those of us that belong to these circles. So the young woman participates in this lovely intergenerational ritual in which we honor her transition into womanhood. And she is embraced by a circle of women that she has chosen to guide her. And each of these women is faced in one of the four directions. And each one of these four directions, and you know, I could talk about this a little later on and how I use that in my treatment and assessment with postpartum moms, is a teaching, is a lesson, is a gift for this young woman to carry throughout, you know, her life. And she must carry herself in a self-respecting and honorable way. And there's this beautiful, beautiful ceremony ritual that's done in these circles. But what I provide is more of an intimate, kind of an alternative to the quinceañera. That is very much opposite of a rite of passage, is this sense of like materialistic queen. Well, you know, it's unfortunately it's become that. But the essence of the quinceañera comes from this Mexican indigenous tradition of Shilonen, the corn maiden. And it's beautiful that it's coming back. A lot of us are practicing this way of honoring the young woman by
That's
giving
beautiful.
Her these gifts, you know, and we have her dress. She makes her own dress. And we have this beautiful crown of flowers for her. We set up her elders or teachers in the directions of the four directions, and they each give her advice and a gift. And then
that
we have a
beautiful
feast.
And a feast.
And it's all very symbolic. It's all, everything has a meaning and symbolism around it. And then of course we do some our danza, you know, traditional Aztec dancing.
That sounds beautiful. It really does.
So yeah, that's for the young women. And then I also facilitate the mother blessing ceremony, which traditionally is a bless-away. It's called a bless-away ceremony that's rooted in the Navajo people's spiritual practices. And it's a way of honoring and blessing the pregnant woman, right, and welcoming her into motherhood. So, and when I do my mother blessings, it's very much kind of like the Shilonen, where we have, you know, she chooses her four elders or her doulas or whatever she wants to call them. Usually her doula and her midwife's there, and then her mom or a sister or friend, that would be her companions, both her during labor and postpartum, that are going to support her. They're stationed in each one of the directions and are given, give her words of wisdom and just shower her with the love and shower her with realistic kind of, not advice, but realistic realistic stories of this is like labor's hard and parenting is hard.
And I
think that's a difference between, you know, our tradition, that we don't, you know, pretend that that labor and motherhood is this beautiful thing. It's no, it's hard.
It hurts. It's painful. It's messy.
It's painful. Yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. It's sweaty. It's loud.
Yes.
It's a rite of passage. And for it to be a rite of passage, it needs to be messy and dirty and painful.
That's right.
Because that's how we come out to be the woman that we are.
That's true.
We were transformed, right, into this new woman.
Beautiful. And it's just so wonderful that there's that reality testing built into that ritual and tradition. And that's so lacking in larger dominant, you know, Anglo culture. So it's just wonderful to hear that there are really beautiful traditions that can be incorporated specifically for the clients that you serve.
Yes.
And women of color and women of any color
exactly,
or background.
Exactly, women of any color, yes. And you said something really important, and it's so true more dominant tradition and culture. Even the ceremony of mother blessing in more the white Anglo community, it's seen a little too, what's the word? That birth is this orgasmic experience and this beautiful guy.
Right.
No. Right. It's the opposite. Right?
Oh my goodness.
We either have a society who doesn't value women at all, and you know, you got pregnant, oh well, you have children, oh well, then deal with it.
Yeah.
Or we have this other extreme of you are this, you know, beautiful goddess, uh-huh. and you, you know, birth is going to be orgasmic, uh-huh. and mothering is the most beautiful thing in the world, uh-huh. and you know, so you have these two extremes.
Exactly.
No.
Oh man, we need some reality, a reality check, but also honoring it at the same time in the reality of the messiness of it too. So.
Yes, like, but it's little by little, it's happening, and
I hope so.
And it is. I really see it happen, especially I think when we work together and collaborate with birth workers, and I'll talk a little bit about some of the projects that I'm doing with, that I'm starting with birth workers, and maternal mental health specialists, that's when we're able to really bridge and come together and work and do prevention around these issues.
Good.
But going deeper to why these like mother blessings and traditional indigenous ways of rites of passage. So in the Aztec culture, in the Mexica Aztec culture, women were given, you know, historically this is like written in the codices, were given the same honor as warriors returning from battle.
Wow. Where
the act of labor and birth itself was seen as a battle that the woman was going through.
That's incredible.
And and she was, so they were transformed into these like, you know, warrior beings, and were seen as courageous when they returned. But of course, you know, not only that, they were nurtured and taken care of, right? And mother themselves.
Right.
The mother's life was of more value. And I mean, if there is that risk of baby dying or mother dying, they ensured that the mother survived. So a mother's life was really much valued. And so she was nurtured and taken care of. And I wanted to share this beautiful little excerpt from a Aztec midwife back in the days. And this is taken from the Florentine Codex. And it says,
please share.
When it says, my beloved maiden, brave woman, thou hast become an eagle warrior. Thou hast become an ocelot, jaguar warrior. Thou hast raised up. Thou hast taken to the shield, the small shield. Thou hast returned exhausted from battle. My beloved maiden, my brave woman, be welcomed. Isn't that beautiful?
It's gorgeous. It's like, giving me the chills as you read it. It's just so beautiful. Gorgeous.
Yeah. So she was introduced to her community with her baby, and these words were being said. So quite different from what
we
experience here now in our modern society.
If only every woman could have that kind of TLC and spiritual communion with her labor partners, her doulas, her midwives, to have that kind of embracing of love and support. What a beautiful service that you provide for your clients. They're so lucky to have your attention and consideration, taking in and incorporating all of these healing modalities to guide them into the passage of motherhood.
Yeah, and I'm not doing this work alone. You know, now it's really beautiful that a group of us got together after a little training of birth workers, you know, doulas, midwives, you know, birth justice advocates, and we say, you know what, let's start a collective of birth workers. And I consider myself a birth worker too, because I work, you know, even though I'm a mental health professional, that this is my primary focus and the work that I do, I'm pregnant and postpartum mom. So And, you know, all of them are women of color, and we see the importance of these, you know, traditions and ancestral knowledge and how they're protective factors. I see it as, yeah, if we're able to do this for moms, we would see a decrease in depression, anxiety, mood disorders. I mean,
I believe that.
Yeah, I would love to do a study. Uh-huh. If there's any university out there that wants to
absolutely
sponsor our work and
no kidding
do an evidence based.
Yeah, seriously. What is the name of the group so we can put it out there in case somebody is looking?
Yeah.
Collaborate.
Yes, it is Inland Empire Birth Workers of Color Collective.
Okay, good to know. So our listeners can hear that, you know, you'd be interested in potentially partnering with other researchers to really kind of see some outcome studies on mental health as a result of these sorts of interventions.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, we're going to be having a meet and greet, but, you know, maybe during the at the end or something, I could say
yes.
A little bit about that, or
great.
You could put it in the notes.
Yes, we will do that for sure. It's wonderful work that you're doing and collaborating with others to help heal the planet. And we need more people like you doing what you're doing. The world's a better place because of that. So it's just really neat to be able to hear the kind of interventions that you're involved in.
I really think it's working together collaboratively with all of the birth workers. I mean, I did a little training with lactation consultants on perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, and I really feel like we need to work closely with them instead of against them or fighting them or judging whatnot or vice versa. So I've decided to take a course on becoming a lactation educator.
Oh, counselor. Good for you. Oh my gosh, that fits perfectly with what you do too, which is wonderful.
Up for that pretty soon, and I'm looking forward to working together with lactation consultants and
wonderful
the team.
Oh, I think that's great. Yes, because each member of the team has something special to offer, and when blended together, it's really the perfect alchemy for and healing for the clients and the populations we work with. So collaboration is everything for sure, and you're leading the charge in that. So thank you again for sharing that wisdom. So it's just absolutely fascinating to hear how Indigenous people's healing practices can be incorporated into healing from life's challenges. And you certainly do that a lot with women's reproductive mental health across the lifespan, which is fabulous. It's such a need. Is there anything more that you wanted to share with us about that specifically, or do you want to move into the next question?
Maybe moving into the next question.
Okay, sounds good. So we both have sons, and you know, we work a lot with women, and that's incredibly empowering, and yet also we realize that our sons and our future men also need emotional support as well. And they're often overlooked in the mental health world. Certainly not in our practices, but, you know, out there in the larger society, unfortunately, boys, you know, continue to have a really tough time emotionally to be able to connect with their internal intuition and insight because it's not honored or respected from the outside dominant culture. And I'm wondering if there are specific ritual services that you recommend for boys and men, like a coming of age ceremony or something along those lines, given that our Anglo kind of Western culture does not really do a good job of honoring boys per se, but maybe you know, women at times might be able to have more overt honoring of those life passages. How about for boys and men? What do you think would be beneficial for them? And what do you suggest?
Yeah. So again, in the Native circles, right, we do in these we do have these ongoing ways, which we call the Guerrero ceremony, or the young warrior ceremony. And it's taken a young man out in nature. And you kind of like Boy Scouts in a way. When you think about it, you teach them how to start a fire and, you know, gather your own food and do your vision quest. And it's looking at your life, your life, what is your sacred purpose through this vision quest, finding what that is. So seeing what does a warrior mean? It doesn't mean being, you know, fighting and being aggressive and this machista. Or it means more of like that spiritual warrior, one that is connected with all living things, one that is honorable and carries himself in a good way. And so these teachings through the Guerrero ceremony, the warrior ceremony, incorporates these elements.
Nice.
There is this wonderful teacher and elder. His name is Jerry Thayil, and he has a National Compadres Network, which would also be nice to include his information in the notes or something, because if people want a male-specific ritual ceremony or curriculum, actually, he does conferences and goes to schools and talks about the importance of having circles for men, talking circles for men and young boys.
So important.
It is, and his work is so beautiful. It really comes from the grass. It really comes from the heart. So any work that Jerry, the National Compadres Network does, and Jerry Dale does, is wonderful. And also there's these nature-based outdoor programs that are specific for young men. So anything that you could do outdoors with them.
Yeah.
Even a small, like, for example, family, you know, for you, example, you and your boys, taking them out camping, you know, teaching them how to start their own fire, maybe going on a mindful walk and see what, you know, incorporating all of their senses. Those are little things that I've done with my son.
Great.
So he could see his place in the world, that his acts matter, like each step that he takes. It must be with reverence to the earth, to our Mother Earth, to society, to be good to society, to do good. What a difference, right, in those teachings. And I think anything that has to do with nature, with young men, there's this innate connection.
Yes.
That little warrior spirit comes
out. Yes, that's the truth.
But if we reframe it, right, from a more spiritual human reframe.
Yes.
You have a sacred purpose and responsibility.
I like
that. Take care of, you know, our earth and all living things, because you are connected to, you know, from the stardust to the creepy crawlers to, you know, the leaves and the trees. And
yes. It's such an important message. It surely is. And with boys being so movement oriented in the way they take in the world, to have these conversations in nature just makes complete sense throughout their childhood. And it's just beautiful how you describe that. And, you know, are there certain guidebooks or, you know, teachings that you recommend specifically for parents to research as relates to helping to support boys in their spiritual and emotional growth?
You know, there's
growth.
This, yes, there's this wonderful book. It's called The Thundering Mirror. And I'm looking, I'm right here in my office, and as you ask me that, I'm like, oh, I know there's a book that I have.
Mm.
It's called The Thundering Years by
nice.
Julie Johnson.
Okay.
It's Rituals and Sacred Wisdom for Teens. And it has some specific examples or activities for young men.
Nice.
I know one that's very powerful too is drumming, like being part of drumming circles.
Yes.
Like music.
Uh-huh.
Specifically, because there's something kind of masculine in that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The energy of.
Right.
So any kind of drumming.
I think you're
spot on. And then I also
on.
Recommend. I also recommend that people do, you know, their research, that we all, our history, you know, we all come from indigenous peoples, whether you're in Asia or Europe, I mean, wherever we all have indigenous, you know, so kind of doing a little bit of history, research on what are some of those practices, because I'm sure that there's, you know, depending on what culture, I'm sure that there's some.
Absolutely.
Activities or rituals. And it's kind of fun to, you know, maybe do the research with, you know, with your child and and seeing what's out there.
I think that's a great idea, like doing some ancestry.com or something along those lines,
there
and really researching the Indigenous history. And you make a really good point that we do all come from Indigenous beginnings, but to honor that and to incorporate that into healing and emotional and spiritual growth, I think, is incredibly helpful for people. And it also brings communities together. And I just think it's a wonderful aspect to incorporate into the healing modalities, and so often overlooked. So just really excited to hear your perspective on this and how you incorporate that into your practice. I just think it's incredibly powerful. And would you like to also share with our listeners how we can be more culturally sensitive or culturally compassionate, and ways to engage and support people that may be from different backgrounds? And what specifically do the Latino and Chicano clients need? And what are the barriers and the obstacles that they face? And is there any wisdom that you can share regarding that specifically?
Lots of questions there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It could be a whole podcast.
I know, it could. Everything could. Maybe it will be. Maybe we should do a separate one entirely just on that. But yeah, that's a pretty big topic. Huge.
But I could touch on a few points that I think are so important to start this process, because it really is like it's a whole framework. It's a whole way of change of plan that needs to happen in personally with individuals as service providers. And I'm going to be kind of speaking as kind of that hat right now as a service provider, and maybe speaking to other clinicians or other service providers. Then we also need a paradigm shift in our culture. But so we first have to look at that our own stuff.
We
have to be true and have a deep desire to connect wholeheartedly and transparently with others. Like really, that's why the name of my Corazón Counseling, because I really do believe if you don't work from the heart, it is going to be evident. Your clients are not going to come back. You will do a disservice instead of a service. And we really have to leave our ego aside and work from a place, wholeheartedly place, transparently with people, with our clients, especially with people of color. If we're not from that particular community or culture, I know I have a lot of African-American clients, and I have to always check my own stuff first and acknowledge my privilege. Even with other Latinas, I happen to be a lighter skin, Latina, Chicana. So even that, I was born here, and I have, you know, U.S. citizenship.
Sure.
Being born here, that's a privilege. So being present with that, acknowledging it. Because if I don't, it really, it's going to get in the way of doing some deep work and in a humble way.
Do you ever acknowledge
that's the first thing.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do you ever acknowledge it openly with your client, or is it something that you sort of you sit with before you see your clients, or both?
No, I do. Especially with my African American clients, I do both, but I really make sure that I state that after, you know, first, especially if the issues that they're bringing have to do with, you know, trauma based on racism and inequalities that they face and all the other stuff that that they go through. So it's kind of like, you know, we're an alliance. I'm with you. I hear you. But I also acknowledge that my experience, even though I'm, you know, Chicana, Latina, Indigenous, my experience has been very different than yours. And I know that. And, you know, so I kind of sit with them, really hold that space.
Good.
And I think that I could see the shift of their expression.
Yes.
They're just like, You know, because they do tell me stories of other therapists that they didn't feel comfortable. They felt re-traumatized or judged or belittled again, right, and shamed. So
Yeah.
Again, that's why going back to having that social justice framework and the work that we do, if we're going to see people of color, we have to, and we can't be all fragile about our own stuff.
This is true.
We can't afford to do that.
You're right. We have to be authentic and transparent and be willing to collaborate with our clients and also to learn from our clients too, their unique perspective, and hold that space and empathy, but also acknowledge maybe our limitations as, you know, a more privileged dominant culture, so to speak, but to create a forum of safety for and trust in the healing relationship, I think, goes a long way. And hearing you, how you approach it is so helpful. I can tell that your demeanor is so sensitive and kind and compassionate, and I wish there were more clinical social workers such as yourself all over the world, because we need that kind of approach to working with people to help change the way things are currently. So, you know, it's just really an honor and a privilege to hear your perspective. But please continue. Mm-hmm. I don't want to interrupt what you were saying. Continue what you were saying.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned something about collaborate, and I think that is essential, you know, is working with our clients from that place of collaboration and respect, like including them in the treatment plan, like going to the working with Latina mothers.
They
want to be included, though they respect the person that, you know, the service provider, you know, but they also want to feel like they're not being talked down to, and they're not being shamed and belittled, or they want to feel like they're contributing to their treatment plan and to their well-being. So you know, for Latina clients, having them feel respected, engaged in the treatment plan, including their family, their partners into the process as well, like when I do my after the initial assessment and redoing the treatment plan, or afterwards, they really want their parent, their partners to be involved in the process, especially in with postpartum depression and anxiety, mothers that I'm working with, or their moms, because whoever's helping doing the caretaking or is living in the home. So, because again, the Latino community is a collective, it's community based, right?
Yes,
family,
yes.
Very family based values and a way of life. So it's not this like individualistic framework. It's very different, and it's okay to include the family in this. Like, they want that. At least the ones that I'm working with.
Yes.
So those are the things in terms of the cultural sensitive ways to engage and support. And then I think that we had a question regarding the barriers and obstacles.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we know, and these are really hard to tackle, but we need to address them somehow at the macro level.
Right.
The social, political inequities and the xenophobia and the anti-immigrant. Just hearing NPR this morning and listening to, like, you know, it's like, okay. Okay, here we go again.
Right. Like, it's almost traumatizing to hear the news.
It is.
Really. It is traumatizing.
It really is. I'm like, okay, where's my sage? Where's my copal?
Seriously.
I'm gonna do my cleansing.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just too much.
It is. It really is.
So these, you know, the constant toxic environment and microaggressions, you know, takes this toll. So those are those bigger barriers.
Yes.
But breaking it down, the other thing is we simply don't have enough mental health professionals that are bilingual and bicultural. We really don't, at least like in private practice or that have specialties in mental health. There are very few of us.
Right.
Who are trained and who are doing this work. And maybe when you break it down, it really does goes back to more of the macro level. It's like, oh, are these kids, you know, communities of color are not being, they don't have the mentorship, you know, to continue. I don't know. There's so many issues with
sure.
that. But I really feel that there's not enough of us.
I agree. Us,
you know, that speak the language, that understand the cultural nuances, and that have this training to work with the particular population, in this case with mothers and perinatal mood disorders. I mean, even in general, there's not enough of us therapists, but women of color, I mean, therapists of color that have efficiency, even less.
It's truly a niche specialty, no question. There is definitely a need for what you're doing out there, and I'm sure you've got a waiting list a mile long knocking on your door. But it's just so fabulous to have you here with us today. Really appreciate your wisdom, Amelia. I know our listeners want to know how to get in touch with you, and can you share with us your website, how we can get a hold of you, and any sort of contact information you'd like the listeners to hear?
Sure. So you all could get a hold of me through my website, www.corazoncounseling.com.
Okay.
I also have a Facebook page, which is Corazon. You can find me under Corazon Counseling.
Okay, great. And so if somebody wants to set up an appointment, they'd contact you through your website, or how would that be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they could contact me through my website.
Okay, great. And are there other resources or groups that you wanted us to know how to get in touch with in terms of working with clients of color or perinatal work that would be helpful for listeners to know about?
So this the Inland Empire Birth Workers of Color Collective, they also have a Facebook page.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure they have a website yet.
Okay, great. So Google and, it, and they'll find it, I'm sure.
They'll find it, also, yes. I.e. Birth Workers of Color. The other one was Jerry Tejo's work of the National Compadres Network.
Okay, gotcha. The National Compadres Network, gotcha. And then do you want your number also out there? I see your number on your website. Would you like the listeners to have that?
Sure. Actually, let me give another number. It's 951 575-2215.
Okay, very good. Then it looks like therapy@corazoncounseling.com email, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the email.
Amelia, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. Really appreciate your spending this last hour with the Savvy Shrink podcast and blessing our listeners with your wisdom. And look forward to having you back, I hope, sometime soon.
Sure. Thank you, Andrea, for the beautiful work that you're doing out in the community and sharing this information with a lot of people out there, not just here in the IE.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Amelia. Really appreciate your being here.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com or visit my website at andreaschneiderlcsw.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.